when they.
So when this got greenlit, it was called The Baster.
It was called The Baster, yes.
And somebody said, well, let's
do this movie called The Baster.
How many millions do you want to make The Baster?
But yes.
America's ready to fall in love with the turkey baster.
Hi, he's Justin Souther, one of the two film critics at the Mountain Express, and
I'm still like Ken do all of it today.
We should do that.
Like Justin would say.
If Justin was responsive.
Yes. If I had a pulse today, I would say that I'm Justin Souther. And then Ken would say he's Ken Hanke. So he can say that without me having a pulse. And then you would say,
"You're doing it fine without me."
And then one of us would say, "We're coming from the Carolina Asheville."
We're coming from the Cinema Lounge, Carolina Asheville, on Hendersonville Road.
Yes.
Well,
we both watched Scott Pilgrim
versus the World.
Yes. And I wrote about it.
Yes, you did.
I don't know how you feel about that. But
how I feel about you writing about it,
yeah.
Or how I felt about your review.
Either one.
Well, I mean, you know, you managed to sit through an awful lot of abysmal crap. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't get something decent once in a while.
Oh,
it usually works out badly, though. We usually give you something we think is going to be decent. It turns out to be even more abysmal crap.
But I'm assuming I like this movie more than you. Just a little bit, right? Or am I wrong?
You've gotten to a point with Edgar Wright where you do the, oh, that's just Edgar routine for things that aren't good. There's like the way I dismiss mistakes in James Whale, oh, that's just Jimmy, you know, and you're...
Like how so?
The fact that you expect the ending to go on too long. It's like it's the price
you
pay.
I think after this movie, I will. The ending didn't bother me. I can understand how...
Well, it's like it ends twice. And then it looks like it's really going to go on. Unfortunately, that dies out real quick.
Right.
Because if it had gone on any further into that, it was going to be like, oh no, shoot me now.
Yeah. But I didn't mind it. I didn't mind that as much. But I can understand the criticism.
You probably liked it better, too, because I think you're more willing to accept Michael Cera than I am.
Yeah,
And while I cannot tell you somebody that would have been better than him,
right.
I still don't like him.
See, I'm to the point where I don't care. Like, he's made much worse stuff than this. And it's,
oh, yeah.
And I don't even really feel like he's doing the same Michael Cera thing here. Maybe I'm just tired of...
I think the biggest thing for me, I think, that is a problem, and it may just be the way a character's written, is, for me, he's pretty well wiped off the screen by the Culkin kid.
Right.
Every time that he's on, it's like he's much more interesting than Michael Cera. Then the character's more interesting, I think.
Right. Well, the premise of Scott Pilgrim versus the World is that we have the titular Scott Pilgrim.
Yes.
Who is...
dating a 17-year-old.
Yes. Then he meets another girl who he starts dating, who just so happens to have a league of evil ex-boyfriends.
Exes.
Yes.
Evil exes.
Yes. And they, he must battle them in very over-the-top video game-like fashions.
Complete with clever titles that appear on the screen every so often to comment
they
on.
They explode into coins.
Yes, and it's very clever. It's very, very, very cleverly done. I think it's very entertaining.
I think what, and something I forgot to mention in the review, is at its base, it's a comedy. And it's not, there's not anybody making comedies this stylish.
Well, that's true, but then again,
because usually it's just, comedies are notorious for not being...
Comedies are notorious for being flatly directed,
right,
because they're directed so that the gag will play regardless of where the camera is.
Right.
So...
But here a lot of the gags are...
Well, a lot of the gags are built into the way the film's made.
Right.
The style is part of the humor.
Right.
It's kind of like Lubitsch on acid.
Put that on the...
That's a... I want to see that on the DVD
yes.
case. This is like Lubitsch on acid. Boy, that'll sell...
to
one
somebody.
And a half copies.
Yeah. Sounds good. I don't know. I like it.
The Expendables is...
You mean you weren't pumped up at all the testosterone on...
Well, it's like taking a bath in testosterone. Weary, worn out testosterone, but testosterone all the same.
Isn't that Sylvester Stallone in a nutshell?
Pretty much, but I can't say I wasn't entertained by it because it is so damn stupid.
Right.
I mean, it's just like...
Well, did you ever think it wouldn't be?
No.
Stupid? If it hadn't been stupid, you would have been disappointed.
Probably, yes. But the fact that the possibility of it not having been stupid, I think, is... No. That wasn't ever going to happen. But
right.
I don't think I expected it to be this stupid.
Right.
This is like cosmically, gargantuan, magnificently, mind-rotted... dumb, with the biggest plot hole I've seen all year. The movie's entire reason for being is stuff blows up neat.
With all these aging action
with
stars.
With aging action stars and Jason Statham hanging around for no apparent reason while...
He'll be in anything.
Well, that's true. Give Jason Statham is like the John Carradine of action movies. For $1.98, he'll be in your movie.
But he's still kind of...
appealing in some sort of really weird way.
Respectable.
Well, he's sometimes in respectable things, I'll say that.
Right. But even when he's in something awful, it's like, good for him.
Cut him some slack, you know.
He's in Crank.
The premise is that Sylvester Stallone heads up this group of people who call themselves the Expendables. They're essentially mercenaries. And through a variety of ridiculous, convoluted things... we finally get to the plot, which is that Bruce Willis is considering hiring either him or Der Arnold. Yes, all three of them are in the same scene. It's like the boardroom at Planet Hollywood. And Stallone gets the job because Der Arnold is too busy anyway, so he has his moment in the film, turns around, walks out of the film. And then Bruce Willis also wisely gets out, which is to overthrow this ridiculous banana republic dictator on an island that probably has less people than the little town I grew up in, which that was about a population of 7,000. It's held in place by an army of, it's either 200 or 250, 41 of which, we actually have a count on this at one point, are blown away in the first encounter they have with just Stallone and Statham. So imagine what happens when the entire force of them get there. And it's awash in really bad CGI. And I can usually forgive a lot of CGI, but this is just like, this does not look good. And they've tried to hide it by shooting it really dark, which just looks like bad special effects in murky photography. But it's got a certain stupid charm because you can laugh at it. You're not laughing with this, trust me. You're laughing at this. I don't mind that I sat through it. It's not happening again.
And I guess the big film this weekend was...
Well, actually, the big film this weekend was The Expendables. It did more at the box office than anything else.
Not here.
Well, this just proves that the Biltmore Grand is the theater to which all the people who want to see movies like The Expendables go to.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Which I already kind of knew.
Yeah, well, I can't say that's unfortunate.
They can have them. I mean,
Nevertheless.
Eat, Pray, Love is the new Julia Roberts picture made by Ryan Murphy, who is the guy who made the very good Running with Scissors. This is not very good. The best I can say is I didn't hate it, which actually, I suppose, is sort of a good thing. I mean, that's an accomplishment when you consider the fact that what we have here is affluent woman who can dump Billy Crudup, put her life on hold, and then dump James Franco, put her life on hold for a year while she runs around the world eating, complaining about gaining weight, but of course, since she's Julia Roberts, she never actually does, find spiritual enlightenment, and end up with Javier Bardem.
You're saying you can't relate?
I'm saying my life should be anywhere near this bad. Okay. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And we're supposed to be sympathetic towards her. I'm hard-pressed to be sympathetic towards anybody who can just put their life on hold for a year and run around.
Right. In soft focus.
In soft focus, yes. Well, you reach a certain age, you get the soft focus lens, you know, which is like being out of focus, but not quite.
Well, you get certain parts of the world.
And the lens steams up, so right. It appears to be in soft focus. Yeah, that's probably true. It's well acted, it's pretty to look at, it's too long. I'm not convinced, but I didn't hate it. The scenes with Richard Jenkins are pretty good. There are a couple of times when the movie transcends itself. It's like right. There are these flashes of really good movie buried in this self-help book on legs. Ah, the Thursday Horror Picture Show is what?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, this is a movie.
Two.
This is a movie that you know something about.
Well, I've seen it.
You have?
If that's what you mean.
That's what I mean.
Well, it's obviously the sequel to the infinitely infamous Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
This is true.
Yes.
It's 12 years later, but
right.
Yes. Okay.
And it's anybody coming into the second film expecting the first one, to a certain extent, is going to be shocked, I think.
Well, yeah, I think that's true, because the first film suggests things that this
right.
film shows.
And when this film shows things, it's in a very over-the-top, absurd kind of way. There's little in the way of realism, for the most part, in this film, where the original was all about looking gritty and...
Are you trying to tell me that the image of the yuppie with the top of his head missing and blood spurting out while he's still driving the Mercedes-Benz is not realistic?
I'm saying it seems scientifically unlikely.
Huh.
So.
And here I was just trying to figure out what kind of a truck can drive in reverse as fast as a Mercedes sports car can drive forward. And you're on an entirely different science. I'm going to have to think about this for a while. Do you think the film goes too far?
In what way?
In any way.
No.
You see, at the time, when this came out, there were even gore fans who thought this film went too far.
Oh, really?
In the realm of gore, well,
at this
gruel,
point,
and bloodiness.
Been,
yeah,
it's
seems kind of tame, almost.
It's Tom Savini.
Yeah.
Makeup effects, I believe. So, I mean...
Yeah, but, I mean, do you think it...
I don't have an issue with these things.
Okay.
Like, and the tone of the movie's so comical that it's... You can't take it seriously.
Yeah, but it's kind of comical to a point.
Well, no, I'm saying...
No, I mean, but the comedy has a point. It's not like it's just
right.
funny. I mean, it's
No,
like,
but I think as far as the gore goes, it's not... It's offset by the fact that it's funny.
I mean, this is a horror movie that definitely, though, does have a point to it.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely subversive. It's the anti-yuppie, anti-me generation, anti-Reagan horror film of the 80s. It's a reaction to the whole family values and everything else, and right. it's pretty nasty about it
yeah.
in general. I mean, it's... It's not a film that your reactionary uncle would care for. Let's put it that way.
I don't have a reactionary uncle.
Well, imagine you had one. Okay. If you had one, he wouldn't like this.
And we have next Tuesday, or this Tuesday.
This coming Tuesday, yes. Yes.
We'll be having another Asheville Film Society screening, and it will be...
Billy Wilder's 1-2-3, starring James Cagney.
Which is not a film I'm familiar with.
I will be interested to see, in a way, how this works. For me, it is Wilder's funniest film. It's certainly his fastest film.
Okay.
The dialogue, everything about it moves at a well, the title pretty much says it, 1-2-3. I mean, it's everything is very fast. But it is also very much of its time. It is a Cold War comedy, which was made in Berlin, partly. Some of it they had to build elsewhere because the wall went up while they were shooting it. So the whole thing, the wall that's worked into the plot, but they can't use the Brandenburg Gate, so they had to recreate it. But the whole thing is very much of its time in that... There are jokes that are going to depend a lot on your frame of reference.
As far as...
Well, do you know who Huntley and Brinkley are?
No.
Okay. Are you familiar with Stripe toothpaste?
Yes.
No, as a brand.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I'm not going to get
anything. Some of the jokes are going to go past you. Would right. you understand a line where Pamela Tiffin asks Arlene Francis if she'd ever made love to a communist, and the response is, no, but I once necked with a Stevenson Democrat. Yeah. Would you understand a Russian taking...
Am I going to have to sit through this movie
yeah.
and hear people...
Yes.
Certain people explaining
Probably,
jokes?
Yes. Okay. I mean, would you understand... The idea of a Russian taking his shoe off and beating on the table, and why that's funny.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's like 1 out of 5.
Okay.
So
I'll find 20% of this movie funny.
No, actually, I don't think it's going to matter that much because it moves so fast. Okay. If you don't get this joke, there will be another one coming along in the next 5 seconds.
Okay.
So it's not. But I think it'll be good for you too because it'll expand your frame of reference, especially after I explain what all those
okay.
jokes are.
All right. Make sure you do it loudly. So
yes, I will.
Okay, good.
We'll do it like an audio commentary. We keep turning the volume down on the film, and I'll explain the jokes.
Okay.
The more you know of the era, the funnier a lot of it's going to be, but you don't need to know it, I think, to enjoy the film, but it'll be interesting to see. Of course, you know, quite a few of our members are old enough that they do know the era, or
right.
at least something of it. Let me ask you one key question. Do you know the song Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot
yes.
Bikini? Okay, well,
I
there we go.
That.
I think we just upped your percentage of how much
okay.
you'll understand of the film.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
What
five,
do we have?
Five movies opening this weekend.
Yes.
It's sort of a depressing array.
Well, we have a Wednesday opener this week.
Yeah, of all the movies on God's earth that do not need a Wednesday opening...
Vampires Suck.
Yes, is probably high on that list.
The only thing that sucks more than vampires is this movie.
Probably.
Yes.
I think we can say that sight unseen, which would be considered unfair if it weren't for the fact that this is by Messrs. Friedberg and Seltzer, who, in a row, have given us Date Movie, Epic Movie, Meet the Spartans, Disaster Movie, and now this.
How did you have this memorized?
I looked. No Friedberg Seltzer movie has ever gotten above a half a star in the Express.
I mean, you're watching this one?
I had planned on it. I figured you were going to use the, oh, you do the horror movies line on me, and so I was going to have to see this one, so I was already...
I was just assuming I was going to see that and lottery ticket.
No, I figured you were going to see
lottery. I wasn't sure who was... We were going back and forth.
It's your turn, but since it's the horror one, I'll do it. Plus, it's one that I can conceivably see earlier in the week.
Right.
Now, whether or not I'll actually do that is another.
But we also have a lottery ticket.
Lottery ticket, which stars the artist formerly known as Lil Bow Wow, and now merely known as Bow Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for the day that he is merely known as Wow.
Also, Ice Cube and
Ice Cube,
Old Man Drag.
Yes, is an Old Man Drag. And Mike Epps in flamboyant preacher drag.
Yes. About Bow Wow winning the lottery.
A $370 million lottery and trying to keep it from people who would like to get it away from him or at least get some part of it. Hilarity ensues.
What else do we have?
They claim. Well, we have...
We'll leave the one for last. You know which one I'm talking about.
Not for sure.
The big relief.
Oh, yes. Okay.
What we're looking forward to. We'll say that.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't know whether we were leaving the worst till last, but we kind of already blew that possibility.
No, I said the one we're
kind of looking forward to.
Yes.
Maybe, sort of. What have we left out here? We left out Nanny McPhee returns.
Yes.
I
never knew she left.
Well, she only returns in this country. Okay. In the rest of the world, it's Nanny McPhee and the Big Bang. Perhaps
I see.
We thought this would be misconstrued. I don't know. So we've changed it to Nanny McPhee Returns. I liked the first film just fine, but I've never had a desire necessarily to revisit the first film. So I'm expecting this to be maybe okay.
Right.
Emma Thompson wrote the screenplay. She wrote the first one. She stars as Nanny McPhee.
Right.
It's also got Ewan McGregor and Maggie Gyllenhaal and Rhys Ifans and
someone else.
Maggie Smith. So the cast is not bad.
Right.
The director is this woman who is from British television, whose work I don't know, so
okay. She's
an unknown quantity. But it's really probably the closest thing to what might be a pleasant surprise this weekend.
Right.
Now, that brings us to...
Well, there's
a fourth. No. I'm getting to this one. That brings us to...
I remember now.
The Switch. A film that was originally called The Baster. Yes, well, which is far more descriptive of an artificial insemination rom-com in which it
turns... Our favorite subgenre.
It's quickly becoming the thing.
All the happening people.
Yeah, all the happening people like a good turkey baster artificial insemination thing. And the premise this time is that Jason Bateman has substituted his own sperm for the sperm of the donor that Jennifer Aniston is supposed to baste herself with. I really think this has a very questionable idea of how this works. which proves that Jason Bateman will do anything for a laugh.
Do we know if it shows her using a turkey baster? Is that...
It's PG-13, so I kind of doubt it. But
sound effects, at least?
We can. Yes, okay, maybe we'll have sound effects. It will look like something out of The Devils, maybe. I don't know.
The Baster.
And it turns, so 7 years later, which is when the...
So when this got greenlit, it was called The Baster.
It was called The Baster, yes.
And somebody said, well, let's
do this movie called The Baster,
how many millions do you want to make The Baster?
Well, yes. I mean, this sounds...
Jennifer Aniston. Would you like to be in a film?
Who can sink just about anything she's in anyway.
We've got this movie for you, Jennifer. It's called The Baster.
Maybe she insisted that the title be changed.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's about you turkey basting yourself.
Yes.
With Jason Bateman's seed.
That's right. And then 7 years later, you'll find out that Jason Bateman is really the father of your 7-year-old child.
Well, does he have to share custody with the turkey baster?
I don't know, but I mean, I would think that he would get to keep his own turkey baster, but I don't know. But I don't guess it's his turkey baster. I don't even understand. After I have suffered through this, assuming I'm the one who does, I will understand how this is done.
It's getting a certain appeal.
What I find appealing is the fact that they are so desperate to find something to promote this with that it's from the makers of Juno.
No, it doesn't say makers. It's from the people who brought you or something like that.
The people who brought... Anyway, yeah. It tries to establish a connection with Juno. Mm-hmm. What this means, other than the fact that Jason Bateman is in both films, which I don't think really qualifies as being the people who brought you, is that the co-producer on this film was one of the 10 people named in as producers, co-producers, and executive producers on this film, was one of the 10 people named as one of the co-producers, executive producers, producers on Juno. This is the tenuous connection between these two movies.
It has the same sort of charm, it sounds like.
But yes.
America's ready to fall in love with the turkey baster.
America is probably ready to see...
America's sweetheart.
To see Jennifer Aniston wielding a turkey baster.
They should just cut Jason Bateman completely out of the movie.
And just co-star her with a turkey baster. Yeah. Why not?
So we have what we're looking forward to.
In a perverse sort of way,
It's Piranha 3D.
Yes.
From the young man who made us
Mirrors, which I liked, but
And
a bunch of stuff that I didn't like.
High Tension.
And the
Hills Have Eyes.
The remake. Not Hills Have Eyes 2, which was even worse than Hills Have Eyes.
Now he's moved on to obviously cheesy horror.
Well, yeah. It's a movie about fish eating.
Well, there's an earthquake
in 3T.
Piranhas come out from a crevice, even in a lake, and start feeding on.
No, Jennifer Aniston.
Start feeding on co-eds with Christopher Lloyd and. I don't know. And it's in 3D. It's the perfect use for 3D.
It's a gimmick movie employing a gimmick device.
Right.
I mean.
What's not to like?
I'm not going to say how bad can it be because it'll prove me wrong, especially since nothing about Mr. Ages, however you pronounce his name.
Yeah, I'm not even sure he has a sense of humor, so I
don't think he understood things like how bad the dialogue in Mirrors was.
Right.
Which, that may just be a language barrier.
It might make for something spectacular.
That's true. So it is a possibility that we will find that there is spectacularosity.
Let's say it's something like one of these. It's so bad, it's good. Which it definitely has. There's a potential there.
Well, yeah.
The reason it has that potential is because he won't realize. There's the possibility he doesn't realize how bad it is, and it's straight faced. I think that was the problem with Snakes on a Plane. Is, for me at least, is you can't make something that bad on purpose. If you just say something's bad, it's like, oh, I made this, it's bad on purpose. It's like, no, it's still bad.
Well,
Because you now admit that it's bad, it doesn't make any difference.
It kind of depends, I think, on the kind of bad that it is. Because
we haven't seen it.
I have long said about the movie Scared to Death that bad movies don't get bad like this accidentally. Right. I almost think that it is supposed to be what it is. I don't think they thought it was bad.
Right.
But I can't imagine that anybody thought this was normal.
Right.
That appears to bring us to a close of this week's exciting episode.
I think it ended up better than I thought it was when we started.
Well, after you got all worked up about the turkey baster and Jennifer Aniston.
We just started with that.
It would have gotten you really wound up and we'd have been in good shape.
Maybe that's the key we needed.
Oh, well. But everything seems sort of, dare I say it, anticlimactic after that.
Well,
so,
you got to ease back in.
That's true. So let's ease on out of here. And
it's a joke we can make with that.
Well.
We're classy. Nevertheless.
I'm just, I don't know if we're too classy to make it or if Steve's too classy not to cut it out. Oh, no, he's shaking his head.
We're still not sure how many people listen to this.
That's true. We may have just offended a very small...
Well, we can always just put stuff at the very end. Because... Just to see who's paying attention.
That's true.
But we'll do it next week, maybe.
So, yeah. But that's true. So, anyway, in any case...
I'm Justin Sowler.
And I'm Ken Hankey.
We're both film critics with The Mountain Express.
Who are kind enough to help bring these interesting... radio dramas to you, or whatever they are. Pod dramas doesn't sound right, so I'm going to call it a radio drama. And we are elitist bastards who have been to the movie. Movies, plural.
We'll
more
be
than
back.
One. Yes, we'll be Two back, and as will our illustrious, our magnificent, our magnanimous, our even adequate producer and coherer.
Yes. Our Sterling.
Sterling. Sterling Schanefeld. No, yes. Steve Schanefeld. Get the name right.
Yes, that's it.
I think we're done.
Okay, good.